Hello, my darling, and welcome to today's story time. Today we are reading Lazarus by Leonid Andreev. And now, on with our story time. Chapter 1. When Lazarus left the grave, where for 3 days and 3 nights he had been under the enigmatical sway of death, and returned alive to his dwelling. For a long time, no one noticed in him those sinister oddities, which, as time went on, made his very name a terror. Gladdened unspeakably by the sight of him who had been returned to life, those near to him caressed him unceasingly, and satiated their burning desire to serve him in solicitude for his food and drink and garments. And they dressed him gorgeously in bright colors of hope and laughter. And when, like a bridegroom to his bridal vestures, he sat again among them at the table and again ate and drank, they wept, overwhelmed with tenderness. And they summoned the neighbors to look at him who had risen miraculously from the dead. These came and shared the serene joy of the hosts. Strangers from far-off towns and hamlets came and adored the miracle in tempestuous words. Like to a beehive was the house of Mary and Martha. Whatever was found new in Lazarus's face and gestures was thought to be some trace of a grave illness and from the shocks recently experienced. Evidently, the destruction wrought by death on the corpse was only arrested by the miraculous power, but its effects were still apparent, and what death had succeeded in doing with Lazarus's face and body was like an artist's unfinished sketch seen under thin glass on Lazarus's temples, under the eyes, and in the hollows of his cheeks lay a deep and cadaverous blueness. Cadaverously blue also were his long fingers, and around his fingernails, grown long in the grave, the blue had become purple and dark. On his lips, the skin, swollen in the grave, had burst in places, and thin reddish cracks were formed, shining as though covered with transparent mica. And he had grown stout. His body, puffed up in the grave, retained its monstrous size, and showed those frightful swellings in which one sensed the presence of the rank liquid of decomposition. But the heavy corpse-like odor, which penetrated Lazarus's grave clothes and, it seemed, his very body, soon entirely disappeared. The blue spots on his face and hands grew paler, then the reddish cracks closed up, although they never disappeared altogether. That is how Lazarus looked when he appeared before people, in his second life. But his face looked natural to those who had seen him in the coffin. In addition to the changes in his appearance, Lazarus's temper seemed to have undergone a transformation. But this circumstance startled no one and attracted no attention. Before his death, Lazarus had always been cheerful and carefree, fond of laughter and a merry joke. It was because of this brightness and cheerfulness, with not a touch of malice and darkness, that the master had grown so fond of him. But now, Lazarus had grown grave and taciturn. He never jested himself, nor responded with laughter to other people's jokes, and the words which he uttered, very infrequently, were the plainest, most ordinary, and necessary words, as deprived of depth and significance as those sounds with which animals express pain and pleasure, thirst and hunger. They were the words that one can say all one's life, and yet they give no indication of what pains and gladdens the depths of the soul. Thus, with the face of a corpse, which for 3 days had been under the heavy sway of death, dark and taciturn, already appallingly transformed, but still unrecognized by anyone in his new self. He was sitting at the feasting table, among friends and relatives, and his gorgeous nuptial garments glittered with yellow and gold and bloody scarlet. Broad waves of jubilation, now soft, now tempestuously sonorous, surged around him. Warm glances of love were reaching out for his face, still cold with the coldness of the grave. And a friend's warm palm caressed his blue, heavy hand, and music played the pipe and the harp. It was as though bees hummed, grasshoppers chirped, and birds warbled over the happy house of Mary and Martha. Chapter 2. One of the guests incautiously lifted the veil. By a thoughtless word, he broke the serene charm and uncovered the truth in all its naked ugliness. Ere the thought formed itself in his mind, his lips uttered with a smile, "Why dost thou not tell us what happened yonder?" And all grew silent, startled by the question. It was as if it occurred to them only now that for 3 days Lazarus had been dead, and they looked at him, anxiously awaiting his answer. But Lazarus kept silence. "Thou dost not wish to tell us," wondered the man. "Is it so terrible yonder?" And again, his thought came after his words. Had it been otherwise, he would not have asked this question, which at that very moment oppressed his heart with its insufferable horror. Uneasiness seized all present, and with a feeling of heavy weariness, they awaited Lazarus's words, but he was silent, sternly and coldly, and his eyes were lowered. And as if for the first time, they noticed the frightful bruises on his face and his repulsive obesity. On the table, as though forgotten by Lazarus, rested his bluish purple wrist, and to this all eyes turned, as if it were from it that the awaited answer was to come. The musicians were still playing, but now the silence reached them too. And even as water extinguishes scattered embers, so were their merry tunes extinguished in the silence. The pipe grew silent. The voices of the sonorous harp murmured away as though the strings had burst. A broken note. Silence. "Thou dost not wish to say," repeated the guest, unable to check his chattering tongue. But the stillness remained unbroken, and the bluish-purple hand rested motionless. And then he stirred slightly, and everyone felt relieved. He lifted up his eyes and lo, straightway embracing everything in one heavy glance, fraught with weariness and horror. He looked at them. Lazarus, who had arisen from the dead. It was the 3rd day since Lazarus had left the grave. Ever since then, many had experienced the pernicious power of his eye. But neither those who were crushed by it forever, nor those who found the strength to resist it in the primordial sources of life, which is as mysterious as death, never could they explain the horror which lay motionless in the depth of his black pupils. Lazarus looked calmly and simply, with no desire to conceal anything, but also with no intention to say anything. He looked coldly, as he who is infinitely indifferent to those alive. Many carefree people came close to him without noticing him, and only later did they learn, with astonishment and fear, that calm, stout man was, that walked slowly, almost touching them with his gorgeous, dazzling garments. The sun did not cease shining when he was looking, nor did the fountain hush its murmur, and the sky overhead remained cloudless and blue. But the man under the spell, with his enigmatical look, heard no more than the fountain, and saw not the sky overhead. Sometimes he wept bitterly. Sometimes he tore his hair and in frenzy called for help. But more than often it came to pass that apathetically and quietly he began to die. And so he languished for many years before everybody's very eyes, wasted away, colorless, flabby, dull, like a tree, silently drying up in a stony soil. And of those who gazed at him, the ones who wept madly, sometimes felt ever again the stir of life, the others never. "So thou dost not wish to tell us what thou hast seen yonder," repeated the man. But now his voice was impassive and dull, and deadly gray weariness showed in Lazarus's eyes, and deadly gray weariness covered like dust all the faces, and with dull amazement the guests stared at each other and did not understand wherefore they had gathered here and sat at the rich table. The talk ceased. They thought it was time to go home, but could not overcome the flaccid, lazy weariness which glued their muscles, and they kept on sitting there, yet apart and torn away from each other, like pale fires scattered over a dark field. But the musicians were paid to play, and again they took their instruments, and again tunes full of studied mirth and studied sorrow began to flow and to rise. They unfolded the customary melody, and the guests hearkened in dull amazement. Already they knew not wherefore it is necessary, and why is it well, that people should pluck strings, inflate their cheeks, blow in thin pipes, and produce a bizarre, many-voiced noise. "What bad music," said someone. The musicians took offense and left. Following them, the guests left one after another, for night was already come. And when placid darkness encircled them, they began to breathe with more ease. Suddenly Lazarus's image loomed up before each of them, in formidable radiance, the blue face of a corpse, grave clothes gorgeous and resplendent, a cold look, in the depths of which lay motionless and unknown horror. As though petrified, they were standing far apart, and darkness enveloped them. But in the darkness blazed brighter and brighter the supernatural vision of him who for 3 days had been under the enigmatical sway of death. For 3 days had he been dead. Thrice had the sun risen and set, but he had been dead. Children had played. Streams murmured over pebbles. A wayfarer had lifted up hot dust in the high road. But he had been dead. And now he is again among them, touches them, looks at them, looks at them. And through the black discs of his pupil, as though through darkened glass, stares the unknowable yonder. Chapter 3. No one was taking care of Lazarus, for no friends, no relatives were left to him, and the great desert which encircled the holy city came near the very threshold of his dwelling. And the desert entered his house and stretched on his couch like a wife and extinguished the fires. No one was taking care of Lazarus. One after the other, the sisters, Mary and Martha, forsook him. For a long while, Martha was loath to abandon him, for she knew not who would feed and pity him. She wept and prayed. But one night, when the wind was roaming in the desert, and with a hissing sound the cypresses were bending over the roof, she dressed noiselessly and secretly left the house. Lazarus probably heard the door slam. It banged against the sidepost under the gusts of the desert wind. But he did not rise to go out and look at her that was abandoning him. All the night long, the cypresses hissed over his head and plaintively thumped the door, letting in the cold, greedy desert. Like a leper, he was shunned by everyone, and it was proposed to tie a bell to his neck, as was done with lepers, to warn people against sudden meetings. But someone remarked, growing frightfully pale, that it would be too horrible if by night the moaning of Lazarus's bell were suddenly heard under the windows. And so, the project was abandoned. And since he did not take care of himself, he would probably have starved to death had not the neighbors brought him food in fear of something that they sensed, but vaguely. The food was brought to him by children. They were not afraid of Lazarus, nor did they mock him with naive cruelty, as children are wont to do with the wretched and miserable. They were indifferent to him, and Lazarus answered them with the same coldness. He had no desire to caress the black little girls and to look into their innocent, shining eyes. Given to time and to the desert, his house was crumbling down, and long since had his famished, lowing goats wandered away to the neighboring pastures, and his bridal garments became threadbare. Ever since that happy day when the musicians played, he had worn them unaware of the difference of the new and the worn. The bright colors grew dull and faded. Vicious dogs and the sharp thorn of the desert turned the tender fabric into rags. By day, when the merciless sun slew all things alive, and even scorpions sought shelter under stones and writhed there in the mad desire to sting, he sat motionless under the sun rays, his blue face and the uncouth, bushy bearded lifted up, bathing in the fiery flood. When people still talked to him, he was once asked, "Poor Lazarus, does it please thee to sit thus and stare at the sun?" And he had answered, "Yes, it does." So strong, it seemed, was the cold of his 3 days' grave. So deep the darkness, but there was no heat on earth to warm Lazarus, nor a splendor that could brighten the darkness of his eyes. That is what came to the mind of those who spoke to Lazarus, and with a sigh, they left him. And when the scarlet, flattened globe would lower, Lazarus would set out for the desert and walk straight toward the sun, as though striving to reach it. He always walked straight toward the sun, and those who tried to follow him and spy upon him, what was he doing at night in the desert? This retained in their memory, the black silhouette of a tall, stout man against the red background of an enormous, flattened disk. Night pursued them with her horrors, and so they did not learn of Lazarus's doings in the desert. But the vision of the black on red was forever branded on their brain, just as a beast with a splinter in its eye furiously rubs its muzzle with its paws. So they too foolishly rubbed their eyes. But what Lazarus had given was indelible, and death alone could efface it. But there were people who lived far away, who never saw Lazarus, and knew of him only by report. With daring curiosity, which is stronger than fear and feeds upon it, with hidden mockery, they would come to Lazarus, who was sitting in the sun, and enter into conversation with him. By this time, Lazarus's appearance had changed for the better, and was not so terrible. The first minute they snapped their fingers, and thought of how stupid the inhabitants of the holy city were. But when the short talk was over, and they started homeward, their looks were such that the inhabitants of the holy city recognized at once and said, "Look, there is one more fool on whom Lazarus has set his eye." And they shook their heads regretfully and lifted up their arms. There came brave, intrepid warriors with tinkling weapons. Happy youths came with laughter and song. busy tradesmen, jingling their money, ran in for a moment, and haughty priests leaned the crosiers against Lazarus's door, and they were all strangely changed as they came back. The same terrible shadow swooped down upon their souls and gave new appearance to the old, familiar world. Those who still had the desire to speak expressed their feelings thus. All things tangible and visible grew hollow, light and transparent, similar to light some shadows in the darkness of night. For that great darkness which holds the whole cosmos was dispersed neither by the sun or by the moon or the stars, but like an immense black shroud enveloped the earth and, like a mother, embraced it. It penetrated all the bodies, iron and stone, and the particles of the bodies, having lost their ties, grew lonely, and it penetrated into the depth of the particles, and the particles of particles became lonely, for that great void, which encircles the cosmos, was not filled with things visible, neither by the sun, nor by the moon and the stars, but reigned unrestrained, penetrating everywhere, severing body from body, particle from particle. In the void, hollow trees spread hollow roots, threatening a fantastic fall. Temples, palaces, and horses loomed up and they were hollow. And in the void, men moved about restlessly, but they were light and hollow like shadows. For time was no more, and the beginning of all things came near their end. The building was still being built. The builders were still hammering away, and its ruins were already seen in the void in its place. The man was still being born, but already funeral candles were burning at his head, and now they were extinguished. And there was the void in place of the man and of the funeral candles. And wrapped by void and darkness, the man in despair trembled in the face of the horror of the infinite. Thus spake the man who still had a desire to speak. But surely, much more could have been told by those who wished not to speak and died in silence. And this, my darling, ends our story time for today. As always, I hope that you have very sweet and creepy dreams.